We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome back to Michigan Football. We'll take a brief look back to last week's victory over Rutgers and forge ahead to this week's game with the Iowa Hawkeyes. Linebacker Cam McGrone, fresh off his first start, will stop by the studio, as well as wide receiver Nico Collins. It's homecoming weekend, and we look forward to seeing all our alumni back in town. So sit back, relax, as we take you in the trenches.
Let's go in the trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Within the team, we knew that we had to win, you know, just for us to bring our morale back, to know that we can still make the season a great one.
You just win right, we just had Saturday for momentum, game by game, you know, brick by brick.
And I guarantee you Michigan is fired up and ready to take on that battle.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
In the Trenches is coming to you from the Studio of Champions inside Schembechler Hall. When you download this, please make sure you like, subscribe, and leave your comments. We want to make sure that we are doing as good a job as we possibly can, bringing you all the inside knowledge that we can from Michigan football. And just a note, last month was our best month that we've had so far since we started In the Trenches about 14, 15 months ago. We had 120,000 downloads. We want to thank all of you for making that possible. When you go to the podcast stream, there are three offerings every week. Obviously, on Wednesday, we bring you In the Trenches, our podcast here, where we always bring you a couple of players. We also have our post-game podcast version, where you get some sound from the game. You get to hear from Coach Harbaugh, some of the players. And then after Monday night's Inside Michigan Football Coaches Show with Jim Harbaugh, we also put that on the stream. Just know that there's three offerings: Wednesday's In the Trenches, Saturday's post-game In the Trenches podcast, and then a rebroadcast of Monday's Inside Michigan Football with Jim Harbaugh. We enjoy bringing you everything we possibly can on this podcast stream. And it is football season, which means it's tailgate season. What are your grilling go-tos when you're planning a Saturday afternoon barbecue? Is it wings, grilled chicken, dogs, and brats? What about a big turkey sub or turkey burgers? Every time you buy turkey, chicken, or egg products at your local grocery store, you're supporting local Michigan family poultry farmers. Generation after generation, they've raised birds sustainably and ethically with your well-being in mind. Because happy, healthy birds make the best, most nutritious food for your families. Find out more at mipoultry.com. At this time, I'd like to bring in my partner, Brian Bush, and I'd also like to announce, as Brian did yesterday, that Brian will now be the play-by-play voice alongside Terry Mills, who will do color for Michigan basketball. Congratulations, Brian.
John, thank you. It's awesome. I'm so thrilled to get going. Can't wait to officially get up in Ann Arbor. I think you've alluded to it before that I've been, you know, in our Learfield IMG College studios in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and man, I can't tell you how excited I've been to work with the University of Michigan from what, four states away. The fact that I'm going to be able to do it in Ann Arbor. And the good news is, too, that I'll be able to continue to host for football, to do this podcast with you. And John Jansen is a big reason why I was able to get this job. I appreciate all you've done to get me out there and to put my name out there. So can't wait, my man. Can't wait.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And the only requirement when you come up here is to be in the Studio of Champions. You've got to bring a championship with you. And that means either football this year, basketball. But I also know that you bring a bowling championship with you. Some of our listeners may not remember that, but we have a world-class bowler as part of the broadcast team. Now, let everybody know what your accomplishments are on the hardwoods.
Wow. Well, I've bowled 1-300. I was my team captain for my high school bowling team my senior year. Yeah, and I was my region bowler of the year my senior year. Made it to the state tournament. Clearly I was the talk of the entire high school, easily the most athletically accomplished person in a school. It was great. So my yearbook, senior year, my high school won the national girls soccer championship. They won like six state championships, yet I knew the yearbook editor pretty well. So she put me as the picture of the athletic achievement, like that full page picture in the yearbook. It's me looking like a weirdo bowling instead of national championships.
Hey, you are a champion and you were a captain. We love captains here at Michigan. So Captain Brian, let's talk about the 7 from 77. Congratulations again.
Thank you, John. All right, number one, let's put a bow on last Saturday. Last thing on Rutgers. You watched the film. Give us your final grade and just any final observations you had after really sinking your teeth into it.
Well, I would give it a B minus. And that may sound a little bit low. And here's why. It was Rutgers. Let's face the facts that Rutgers right now is not a great program. They're moving on from their head coach after that game. It was a good victory for Michigan, 52-0. You can't take anything away from that, but what Michigan did was take care of business. So when you do that, your grade starts out at C. Then you look and you say, okay, they played with better energy. They played, we saw some explosive plays. We saw some rhythm on offense. We saw a defense that totally took a team, putting pressure on a quarterback, taking away their rushing attack. And that is really what Rutgers had hung their hat on, was Isaiah Pacheco was a guy that could break off big runs. He did last year, 80 yards against Michigan. This year, they weren't able to do that. So all of that being said, I think Michigan comes away with better than average performance, but we need to continue to see improvement, and we need to see it this week against a good team in the Iowa Hawkeyes. Ranked 14 ahead of Michigan right now. Michigan's at 19. Unacceptable.
Well, that will all get figured out on Saturday. Now, Iowa's very good. They're 4-0. They churned out 644 yards against Middle Tennessee last week. That was their highest such output in 22 years. And to me, watching Iowa, it feels a little bit different than what we've seen from them in the past, mainly because of Nate Stanley. He's got a 64-plus percent completion percentage. He's up 5% from last year. And to me, the most important thing, and something we've talked about a lot with Michigan, not a single pick. He had 10 last year. Third-year starter, he's really improved. What have you seen from him, and how can Michigan slow him down?
Well, it's in terms of slowing him down, it's going to put pressure on him. He's been sacked 6 times. The more you put pressure on a quarterback, especially in an environment that the homecoming crowd will create in the Big House at noon on Saturday, it's going to be an unfriendly environment for the Iowa Hawkeyes, and the defense has to fly around. You've got to see guys like Quiddy Pay, which we saw last week against Rutgers, put pressure on the quarterback. We saw it from Cam McGrone, Josh Uche. And then they've got to change up their coverages. This is a guy that is, like you said, he's a 3-year starter. He understands how to operate this offense. And if you allow him to do that and get comfortable, he will be very effective. So you've got to change the looks in the secondary. And when you think about the secondary, you think about Kalik Hudson, LaVert Hill, Jordan Glasgow, Josh Metellus. All of those guys will have to be tuned into the defenses that Don Brown calls, making sure they're on top of everything and moving around. There's a lot of moving parts, but it is something this defense has been very good at. We saw an improvement last week, and they've got to find a way to continue to pressure against a good offensive line. Ulrich Jackson is a kid that grew up locally here, hasn't played a lot this year. Him and Tristan Wirfs were the tackles coming in for Iowa that everybody said, oh, they're going to be, you know, top first round picks, and they still might be. But Ulrich Jackson has been out since week one, really first half of week one, with a lower body injury. I expect him to be back. If there was any game that he wanted to play in, it would be here in Ann Arbor against his, you know, a team that he watched growing up. So they've got to find a way to test to see if Ulrich Jackson is 100% healthy. Plant that seed in his mind that maybe he is not up to par, is going to try and go, but you've got to test him. And then Tristan Wirfs on the other side, again, a very talented tackle. But if Quiddy Pay, Josh Uche, Aiden Hutchinson, all of these guys, they want to say that they're good players. Let's see it against some of the best in the country. So it'll be a good challenge. And then with that rushing attack, they don't have one guy that you typically think of for Iowa as creating their rushing attack. They've got three different guys that they really lean on right now, and that's Mekhi Sargent, Torin Young, and Tyler Goodson. Each of those guys are over 200 yards. Mekhi Sargent leads with 299 yards, the most attempts at 54, but they all average over 5 yards per carry. So it's going to be up to Michigan to, one, stop the run and force pressure on Nate Stanley.
Number three on today's 7 from 77. Let's flip to Iowa's defense and how Michigan can combat that. So far, Hawkeyes have allowed just 34 points. Now, it's not a murderer's row of a schedule. Miami of Ohio, Rutgers, their lone real tough test at Iowa State, they won by one, and then they knocked off Middle Tennessee last week. Starting with the running game for Michigan, more is desired certainly from that side of the Wolverines offensively. How can they get it going against a team that really traditionally has defended the run very well? Especially, John, you and I were talking about this from their secondary. Their secondary is key combating the run game.
Well, it all comes down to, and Nick Eubanks mentioned this on the coaches show on Monday night, is what the coaches are preaching to the tight ends, what they're preaching to the offensive line, is that good technique can move anybody. This is a very tough defensive front. You've got Chauncey Golson, A.J. Epinesa at the defensive ends. A.J. Epinesa is a big, athletic, long-armed guy that moves extremely well. Had 10.5 sacks last year. It didn't even start a game. Right now, he's only got one, but there's a big emphasis for this Iowa team to continue to put pressure on quarterbacks. Having said that, when you think about running the football, you've got to have angles, you've got to have aggression, and you have to play with great technique. I know that Ed Warner, our offensive line coach, is hammering that into these guys. Last week was John Runyon's second game back. He looked healthy. He was moving well. He looked comfortable being back on the field, and I think that is a huge boost to this offensive line. So you've got to have five guys that are working as one. And I've said this before, it's like elephants in a circus. When you watch the offensive line, if it's a left step, everybody's got to be taking the same steps. They've got to deliver a blow on that second power step and then move the guys off the ball. If we can do that and be technically sound, we will develop a running game. And this is Iowa. This is a number that we haven't mentioned yet. They've only allowed 77 yards on the ground. And I know the competition hasn't been the best, but this is a big defensive front, and we need to see from the Wisconsin game to the Iowa game, with Rutgers sandwiched in the middle, what has Michigan done to figure out how to run the football, and it comes down to delivering a blow and playing with good technique.
Number four, let's talk about Michigan's passing attack. On Saturday, you could see that some of the concepts we were eyeing for the first three games started to come out. Shea Patterson got the ball. His first seven completions were of 10 or more yards. This is a little bit different against Iowa. How can Michigan keep that upward tick going with the passing game and Shea Patterson?
Well, I think a lot of it revolves around Josh Gattis being on the field, and Coach mentioned it last night as well. I'm sorry, on Monday night, with the fact that having him down there and personnel groups getting in and off the field, that's one thing. But making sure that the right guys are running the right routes. You want to make sure that you've got Nico Collins running the go route and a guy that can go up and grab the football. You've got Ronnie Bell, who is so good going across the middle and running possession routes and makes catches in tough situations, and the concentration that he has, and Donovan Peoples-Jones, getting him back. I know we didn't see him a whole lot the last couple of weeks, but every time he is out there, there's a different feel of what can happen and what he provides this offense. So it's a matter of spreading the ball around, and Shea Patterson did that last week. He was very comfortable. This is an offense. When I talk about John Runyon being back and being healthy and comfortable, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Shea Patterson finally looking like he's healthy and comfortable again. Hopefully, we don't know yet about Sean McCune, but then you throw Nick Eubanks in there. We have an opportunity if they can continue to find a rhythm on offense. And when you think about what they did last week to start the game off, 5 plays in the first drive, 80 yards, and included that long pass, touchdown pass to Nico Collins. 3 and out for the defense, and then 9 plays, 61 yards for a touchdown. That is how you develop a rhythm on offense. And if they can continue to do that, you will find that the receivers will be open, Shea Patterson will deliver the football, and then it comes down to protecting Shea Patterson. The reason he was so good last week was because he wasn't running for his life. He wasn't taking hits. He wasn't releasing the football and taking a shot. He felt comfortable in the pocket. They moved him around a little bit, and he looked good throwing it left and right, which is a great sign, and he was accurate. If we can keep him comfortable and keep a flow on offense, that is how you will continue to generate big plays, explosive plays, and excitement on offense.
Number 5, John, we've broken this game down a lot. If you can pinpoint the one key you're looking at here on Wednesday, a few days out, Michigan will win this game if
they don't turn the ball over. And that was the key against Wisconsin. It didn't happen. We had 4 turnovers, and you see what happened. We only had 1 against Rutgers, and I guarantee you Shea Patterson would like to have that throw back. You just don't get that opportunity, but it didn't play a factor in that game. But the fact of the matter was they went from 4-1. Now we got to go from 1-0. If Michigan does not turn the ball over, if they don't fumble it, whether it's a running back, a wide receiver, a punt returner, kick returner, don't lay the ball on the ground. And for Shea Patterson, it's about making good decisions. And if he is comfortable in the pocket, he will make good decisions. We saw that for 10 weeks last year. You didn't see it against Notre Dame. You didn't see it against Ohio State. But for those 10 weeks in the middle, we saw Shea Patterson make good decisions. If he is comfortable in the pocket, if he is protected, he will make those good decisions, and we will not turn the ball over. That will translate into a victory for Michigan.
Number 6 on today's 7 from 77. You mentioned it off the top. It's homecoming week. Any former teammates that you know of coming to town, and what memories does homecoming invoke?
Well, I know that Charles Woodson is supposed to be here this weekend, Saturday night. He's being inducted into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame, which is a terrific honor. So he'll be in town. There's going to be a host of guys that are back in town. There'll be a lot of alumni. This is a great event. And the reason homecoming is so special, because it really starts on about Thursday night as people start to come into town a little bit early for the game. Friday night, there's events all over the athletic campus, all over Central Campus, North Campus, everybody coming back into town to get together with those that they were at school with, rehashing memories, and nothing will culminate into a great weekend more than all of those people who come to the game on Saturday and watch Michigan football. Michigan football has been such a great part of every student's life that has come through Michigan, whether they were players, whether they were students and they came to the game. Everybody has a memory of Michigan football. And this Saturday, all those memories will come flooding back as people come back to Ann Arbor. A terrific weekend to be around the football stadium. And it's going to be a beautiful day. It's supposed to be a high of about 55. Sun will be out. It's a noon kick. It doesn't get any better than that.
Man, this has been a dream schedule for you. All these noon games. It's like we're in 1997 again.
You know what? And I don't know the exact fact on this, but I was talking with Tony Butler, our engineer, last Monday night after the coaches show. We're going to have 5 noon games in a row. And I don't know that that's happened since probably the 98 season. So I couldn't be more happy. And 2 of those are in the Central Time Zone. So we get to start at 11. It's amazing.
That's true. All right, John, number 7. The last time Michigan and Iowa faced off in the pregame show, you told a pretty great story, and this is a brief bit of it.
I had a couple of guys get up in my grill, and we had a little discussion. He went out to cool off, came back in, and thought that he may want to apologize. And
oh, I have one question. How big was this guy?
How big was
he? He was about 5'4". Came up
John,
to my belly
your
button.
Grill is a long way off the floor. So I just, was this guy standing on a box or something?
He was doing his best. I think he was on his tippy toes.
Oh. Hey, they grow them tough around here.
They do, yeah.
Maybe not smart, but tough.
Yeah, he was bigger in his mind, that's for sure.
Oh, John, do you remember that? Can you give us any more detail? And, hey, you know what? Iowa fans, some of the most passionate in the Big Ten, this is a really cool matchup. And, you know, kind of like that matchup that we have every 6 years, the 6-year stretch with Wisconsin. We got it with Nebraska coming up in a couple of years. Hopefully we get Iowa here sooner rather than later to see them every year.
And so all I have to say about that is when you come to Ann Arbor and you're here on a Friday night, if I don't care who you're from, where, what school you're from, this, we will treat you with respect. We will treat you with class until 12:05, which is the official kickoff time this Saturday. And then for 3.5 hours, we will treat you with the disdain that you deserve. And we will do everything we can to win that football game. I don't care if it's in the stands, if it's outside the stadium, if it's in the press box. I'm looking for a matchup for John Jansen. If it's their play-by-play guy, if it's their color guy, their pregame guy, I don't care. Let's line up and get it done, because Michigan will do that on Saturday afternoon with the Iowa Hawkeyes. John Runyon taking on AJ Epenesa. I tell you what, I can't get to my pregame speech yet.
You're using some of that material already.
I could not be more excited for a football game. You know, we talk about the first game of the year, and there's an excitement there. But as the year goes on, every week, the excitement continues to grow, because we get better as a football team. The matchups get better. This week it's Iowa. Then we move on, and it's whoever's next. This is going to be an exciting and very important game in the Big Ten, for Iowa in the West, for Michigan in the East. This one will be one that we'll talk about in November when we're finding out who's going to Indianapolis.
No doubt about that. All right, John, before the interviews, our bacon fact. That guy didn't have much of a brain that you interacted with a few years back. But speaking of brain, per baconismagic.ca, which is a real-life thing on the internet, it's probably your resume page, John, bacon helps memory, so parents are encouraged to give their children bacon to help develop the brain more.
I think that's genius. It obviously, I mean, the only reason I still have one is because of all the bacon I eat. And I appreciate you saying that the Iowa guy was the one without the brain. Most people would think it would be me. So
no, you gave us the tail of the tape. You said he was what, 5'4", 5'6"?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Wasn't his smartest moment. I don't think he was consuming something, but it wasn't bacon.
Yes, that's for sure. But yes, bacon, good for the heart, good for the mind, and good for football players. And 2 of those football players, linebacker Cam McGrone, fresh off his first start, and Nico Collins, one of our terrific wide receivers. This is my conversation with them. Take a listen. Cam McGrone joins us on In the Trenches. Cam, you got your first start last Saturday. What did it feel like when you got the word that you were going to be starting?
It felt like a sigh of relief. You know, I've been waiting for this, you know, for the past year, and to finally get my opportunity, it was great.
What was it like then to run out of the tunnel? You've done it before, but knowing that the defensive first snap, you were going to be on the field.
It was a different feeling. You know, like I could really feel, you know, the vibe in the air. You know, I was over there shaking on the sideline, you know, just itching to get out there. So it was definitely a different feeling.
And then when the ball was snapped, I know – You've been on the field before, so playing out there isn't something new, but knowing that you were going to have extended time, as the game went on, how much more comfortable did you become playing this defense, being out on the field?
I felt like back at home, you know, just I knew what I could do, I knew what I had to do, and just being out there in front of, you know, 100,000 people, I feel like I could do anything.
First half, we saw you break through the line, get a hit on the quarterback. When that happens, first of all, what's going through your mind? And second of all, what was it like to put a hit on the quarterback?
When I started running and nobody touched me at all, like nobody even looked at me, I was like, oh, it's bad news for this guy. And, you know, just to get, you know, three hits on the quarterback in the first half, it was just, owed to the D-line, you know, for getting me free. And then, you know, Coach Brown for giving me a chance.
Did you know when that play was called that you were going to have a chance to get your hands on the quarterback?
Yeah, like one of my hits, I knew for sure I was going to get hit in the quarterback, but like the other two, I had no idea that I was going to come untouched like that.
when that happens, football has obviously changed. How much does it go through your mind that you can't hit his head? There's a certain way you got to hit him. Sometimes there's a certain way you got to fall. I mean, it's different than when I played. I'll say that. And how much of that goes into the thought process when you're hitting the quarterback?
It's definitely like a split second decision, you know. It was really like right before I made contact, I knew I had to, you know, stay low. I couldn't, you know, go too high. I couldn't put my head into it. So it's definitely like a different way of playing the game, but it's just how we have to do it now.
What's different in the preparation, knowing that you're going to be the starter, you're going to get extended time, as opposed to being ready when they call on you during the game?
I feel like I've prepared the same, you know, like especially this past week. I feel like I prepared the same as I did, you know, even from last year. It's just, you know, like a different level of, intensity, you know, because I know, you know, like I'm going to have to be out there, you know, the first snap and I have to bring in my all, you know, instead of just sitting on the sideline for, you know, 2-3 quarters and then, you know, like get my name called and have to go in and then get that intensity back up.
Last year, we all did this in high school. We played every snap, most of us offense, defense. You never come out of the game. Mm-hmm. Then you come to Michigan and you've got to, you know, earn your right to be on the field. You've got to work your way through the depth chart. How much of a challenge was it for you to not be on the field every snap of a game?
It was definitely, you know, hard, especially like last year. But, you know, my teammates, my family, my coaches, you know, like they kept me in it. You know, they kept me motivated. And, you know, it all worked out because, you know, this year I've gotten my chance and I think I've, taken advantage of it.
How hard is it to be ready when, like you said, you go 2 or 3 quarters and then somebody calls your name? But when you get your name called, you know it's your chance. Mm-hmm. And if you do well, it leads to more chances. Right. But how hard is it to be ready at any given moment, knowing that, like in the Wisconsin game, Josh goes down, they say, hey, Cam, you're in, and to be ready at any given second?
I mean, you know, like it's definitely different, but, you know, I think it's just the name of the game now, you know, you just have to, you know, stay locked in and, you know, you have to know your stuff. Mm-hmm. And, then, you know, like once your name is called, you just have to go out there and play your game.
What's different this year in terms of how you understand the game, understand Don Brown's defense, as opposed to last year, being a freshman and it's all new?
Yeah, last year I definitely did a lot of thinking. No, I was really not as fast as I could have been out there because I was doing just too much thinking. But now it's just, you know, like I know my job, I know the D-line job, I know what's happening behind me. And watching so much film and knowing what the offense is going to do in, you know, certain situations with knowing, you know, our plays and why we're running them has definitely made it a lot easier.
When you turned the film on Sunday and you watched the game, how'd you think you did in that first start?
You know, pretty well. I didn't play as good as I could. I feel like, you know, it was a couple of plays I could, you know, like made an impact on some tackles. But I feel like I played pretty well for my first start.
Well, welcome to the club because I played 11 years in the NFL and never looked back and said, nah, I think I played pretty good. There's always those couple of plays.
Yeah.
And then in preparation for this week playing Iowa, different level of competition, what do you want to improve on? What do you hope? Or what do you plan on doing better in the second one as opposed to the first start?
You know, just flying around more. you know, just trying to be around the ball more. I feel like I wasn't around the ball as much as I could have been. You know, even though, like, they were passing a lot and I was out of position most of the time, you know, like, still being around the ball, you know, like, just in case a breakout or, you know, the ball's out, I think I can definitely work on that this weekend.
One of the things that I know Jim and Dan, who were calling the game, were talking about is the speed at which you play. You bring a you know, a fast pace of play, whether it's sideline to sideline or attacking the quarterback. What is that something, or what else is it that you think you bring uniqueness to this defense?
Yes, I, you know, like, I do feel like my speed is one of my strong suits, but also, you know, my power, mm-hmm. My play recognition, and just, like, you know, with my play recognition, my quickness, you know, like, just being able to get to the ball fast, read my keys fast, and get to where I need to be. You know, I feel like that's really my strong suit.
How hard was it for this team to, you know, suffer the setback that we did in Madison and then prepare, but yet play the way you guys did with high energy and execution on Saturday?
Yeah, you know, we need to do it. You know, we don't really listen to outside noise, but within the team, we knew that we had to win, you know, just for us to bring our morale back, to know that we can still make this season a great one.
When you look back at the end of the year, and I know it's sometimes it's hard to do when you're right in the middle of it, but you look back on Sunday and you look at the film and you say, I'd like to do these things better. At the end of the year, when you look back, what do you think you'll say on the opportunity to play at this point in the season?
I don't know. I'll probably look back at it and say, like, man, like, I played terrible. Like, what was I doing? You know, because, you know, I'm hoping that over, you know, these next games and throughout the season that I'll get, you know, better and better every game. And, you know, by the time I look back at this game, I hope I say I played terrible because I'm playing so well later on.
Mm-hmm. And what's the goal against Iowa this week? Obviously, I mean, I'm not going to set you up with saying win. We all know that's the goal. But for the defense, you know, it's a offense traditionally similar to what we saw at Wisconsin.
Right.
What do you guys want to be able to accomplish this week against Iowa?
We just want to, you know, like, decrease their morale. You know, like, they, like you said, Wisconsin, like, they're similar. You know, like, they want to just run the ball down our mouths, punish us. But, you know, I feel like we can do that right back to them and just force them to, you know, play into our game.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cam, I appreciate it. I enjoyed watching you, and I'm looking forward to more of that. So good luck on Saturday.
Appreciate it.
Nico Collins joins us on In the Trenches. Nico, offense really seemed to start clicking against Rutgers. Mm-hmm. Did it feel different on the field?
Yeah, it did feel different. The one thing I felt different with Coach Gattis, he was on the field, on the sideline with us. You know, you just tell the momentum on the sideline was totally different from him being in the box. You know, he was on the sideline controlling things. You know, asking us what we see instead of just asking other people to translate it for us. But, you know, it was a big impact.
Oh, and he obviously, I know he's got energy at practice. He's got energy on the field. We saw him jumping around. We saw him shouting and screaming. You know, what, in regards to just the energy he brings, how much different is the sidelines with him down there?
It was a major difference. You know, it's just how he practiced. You know, he's always on the field, on the sidelines, yelling at us, you know. And you could just tell the tempo of the game on offense was different when he was down there.
What are some of the challenges from the receiver position with this new offense? I know you guys become more of a focal point of it, but the tempo, the play, I mean, everything is different. What are some of the challenges from your position?
Mainly just knowing all the positions, you know, just the details. It's not really a challenge, but, you know, it's just focus. You mainly just focus on our details, on our route running, you know, our techniques we need to use on certain plays. So, you know, just things like that we just have to focus on.
We talked a lot before the season about the wide receiver room with you and Tariq being healthy and Donovan Peoples-Jones, and now we're seeing Ronnie Bell. You know, how much talent is there actually in that room?
It's a lot of talent. You know, we got us four. We got Mikey, Cornelius mm-hmm. coming up, stepping in the picture. You know, so the future, you got Giles Jackson. Mm-hmm. So the future, you know, it's going to be bright in the receiver room.
So you open up this game with a touchdown. And what's it feel like coming off of a game like we had against Wisconsin to start with no turnovers, touchdown drive, and you're the one that ends up in the end zone?
Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, you know, that whole week we just had chip on our shoulder. You know, we just finding things we need to improve on, you know. And we just, whenever we got the ball, we was thinking touchdown. And that's what we did. We pressing all day, finishing, you know, that whole week in practice, you know, finishing through the play. And Shea found me on the out route and took it to the house.
When you start the game like that, you start fast. The defense came with a three and out. You guys went down and scored again. How important is it for this team right now to be able to start with, you know, either a touchdown drive or something positive happening?
It's very important. You know, I try to, you know, get the offense going. You know, I did that, you know. But the first play of the game, you know, the tempo, the blocking from the O-line was impressive. You know, we just – you seen how we just – the preparation for the game was there. You know, we tried to have energy the whole game, make big plays, and we were just going to feed off that. And I feel like that's what we did the entire game.
On the flip side, the first couple of games, you know, it was the first possession was a turnover. How hard is it to overcome those? And have you guys talked about that? Because at some point it may happen again, or at some point during the game it's going to happen. How hard is it to overcome some of those events right now?
You know, that's first game of the season. You know, everybody got the jitters, you know, kind of nervous, and you have a turnover. But, you know, we just learned from that, you know, these 3 weeks. After Wisconsin, the main thing we focus on ball security. You know, less fumbles, turnovers, you know, just focusing on the small details, you know, and just, you know, just focusing on everything we need to do.
You guys got things going against Rutgers, you know, a lot more than we saw really in the first three games. Do you feel now that when we play Iowa, it's going to be pick up where you left off against Rutgers?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I keep going. You know, use this win right now. We just had Saturday for momentum, and hopefully we can win Saturday. You know, I feel like the preparation is going to be good. You know, I feel like the coaches got a great game plan this week for us. So all we got to do is trust it and play to our fullest.
A lot of momentum going into this game and a tough opponent with Iowa. I know there's a lot of film left to still watch, but when you break down the film of a defense and you pair that with the routes that you're going to be running, the plays that are going to be called, you know, what do you see in this Iowa team?
Iowa defense is a great defense. You know, they got great secondary, linebackers, you know. But the thing we just have to focus on is really just focusing on us. You know, how can we just find the holes in the defense, you know, just focus on our details.
How much of that focus right now wasn't on Rutgers, isn't on Iowa, it's just on what you guys can do and trying to be better each and every week?
Mainly we just focus game by game. You know, and we're not thinking last week, you know, last week in the past now. So now we focus on the next opponent, which is Iowa. And I feel like this week we'll have a great week of practice, you know, momentum juice. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we don't like that feeling of losing anymore. So we're going to, you know, see how we can change that.
How much can that momentum carry over from game to game?
A lot. You know, we win this game, it's a big win. And after that, we got Illinois. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of Big Ten play. So we just game by game. You know, brick by brick, and we just going to focus on everything we need to do.
All right, thanks. Nico Collins, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks to Cam McGrone and Nico Collins sharing their experiences and what to look forward to against Iowa. But before we close this session out on In the Trenches, there's a few more things we want to get to. Brian, you want to talk a little CFP, football playoffs?
Yeah, John, we went really in-depth with the Michigan-Iowa matchup. It's a huge game. That's why we did it in 7 from 77. But we normally branch out a little bit during that segment, so let's do so now. It's a pretty good stopping point. This is a 15-week season now with two byes, 12 games, and a championship week. So we're at the one-third pole. Right now, go from 4-1 for me. What would be your college football playoff?
So when I watch college football, I look at teams that are obviously an explosive offense and that they're playing some semblance of defense. And when I say my number four team, most people will probably raise an eyebrow and say they don't play defense, and that's the Oklahoma Sooners. They haven't traditionally, but this year they are playing better defense. Their level of competition hasn't been outstanding yet, but when you watch Jalen Hurts and the way that he operates this offense under Lincoln Riley, he is playing at an extremely high level. He fits the bill, has been throwing extremely well, has been able to pick up some first downs and touchdowns with his feet. So they're not my number four. Georgia, who I think has one of the better wins this season. They took on Notre Dame down at Sanford Stadium. And Jake Fromm, their quarterback, is a guy that he's not sexy, he's not flashy, he's not doing a lot that you would think, hey, this is a Heisman Trophy quarterback. But what he does is go out there and deliver the football. There's never an environment that's too big from him. And their offensive line is playing extremely well. Pair that with the fact that Georgia, I think, has one of the top five defenses in the country and one of the better wins over Notre Dame. They're my number three team. Number two is LSU. This team under Ed Orgeron, who last year was running an archaic offense, just couldn't find a rhythm with Joe Burrow, transfer from Ohio State. This year, they bring in a new coordinator. They're playing really good defense. We saw them against Texas in Austin play one of the better games this college football season. So that's why I've got them at number two. And most Michigan fans won't like my next answer, but I've got my number one team in the country right now is Ohio State. And I hope they stay there. Part of the reason why I have Ohio State as number one is because when Michigan and Ohio State face off at the end of the football season, I want everybody to be talking about how great Ohio State is, how great Justin Fields, the transfer from Georgia, has come in and delivered the football to those wide receivers. J.K. Dobbins is running the ball all over the place. Their offensive line, even though last year it was in shambles, is talked about as one of the better offensive lines. And the defensive player of the year, Chase Young, nobody can block this guy. He's long, he's fast, he's big, he's strong, he is unblockable. 7 sacks already, 8 this year. It is unbelievable. I can't believe he is allowed to play the game of football right now. Ohio State seems to be unbeatable. Clemson, you're not even in the top 5. Alabama, you are what used to be. Right now, it's all about Ohio.
Well, if anyone ever calls you completely biased, we'll just play for them that last minute. But you did.
And
keep...
when Michigan plays them, yeah, it will be a epic matchup because Michigan has done it before and they will do it again.
Can't wait. No Bama, no Clemson. And I think that's right. I mean, I'm not a big fan of preseason polls. I do like the fact that the playoff does not have a poll until, what, about halfway, maybe a smidge after halfway through the season. Because, I mean, Clemson is not the number one team in the nation. Alabama, I don't think, is the number one team in the nation. They haven't done anything yet. I think people need to take the approach you are and take it by what you've seen this year as opposed to the long term.
Hey, Alabama with Tua Tagovailoa and their receivers, they are excellent. They're very good, but I just haven't seen them play enough competition to know exactly who they are, what they are on defense. This is not a traditional Alabama defense that we knew with, was it Jonathan Allen, the defensive tackle of 3 or 4 years ago. They were a dominant defense. They're not that anymore. And I'm just not sure how they match up against LSU, against Auburn in the Iron Bowl at the end of the year. That remains to be seen. It's not that they're out of it. It's just that they haven't played anybody that proves to me that they can be there. And then when you look at Clemson, rightly so, they were picked number one. Trevor Lawrence couldn't have had a better freshman season. He is a prototypical quarterback that can deliver the football. It had great numbers last year, and you would think that that would continue. Well, he's thrown more interceptions in what, 5 games than he threw all of last year. Yeah. They're just not playing to the level that I thought they would. And with last week's game against North Carolina, they should have lost that game. And, you know, they come away with a win. Championship teams find a way to win. And so they did that. And they may be there at the end. But right now, I don't think that they're playing as good as those other 4 teams, Oklahoma, Georgia, LSU, and Ohio.
Yeah, and there'll be chances to prove that. I mean, Bama's got their biggest games coming up, as do Clemson. I guess not really Clemson. They don't have any big games. So the luckiest man in the world is probably Chris Ash. He gets paid $8+ million to not coach Rutgers. So congratulations to him. But there is a tie to the change there. Anthony Campanile, Michigan's linebackers coach, his brother Nunzio is now the new interim coach. Uphill battle, but still, that's got to be pretty cool.
It is. You know, when you think about Nunzio, just a couple of years ago, he was coaching high school football. And you think about the transition from being a high school football coach and then going to you know, Rutgers University, who's their hometown team, and being what he's been able to do there. And then you look at, you know, going from tight end coach to head coach. And I think they did this move right now because the next few weeks after the Michigan game, they play Maryland, Indiana, Minnesota, Liberty, and then they travel to Champaign to play Illinois. So they've got a 5-week stretch there where it's not that they can win all those games, but they're not the toughest competition on their schedule because they finish out the season against Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State. So if they're going to make a change, now is probably the time to do it. And what a great opportunity for Nunzio. And I know that Anthony is extremely excited for him, but it's an uphill battle there at Rutgers.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, the Big Ten, especially the Big Ten East, needs Rutgers to figure it out. They don't need to be world beaters, but they can't be what they've been over the last 4 or 5 years. Lastly, John, Michigan hockey starting up this weekend. Good luck to Mel Pearson and the Wolverines hockey team. They get going with an exhibition on Sunday against Windsor at Yost. Did you ever play hockey? I know you had a baseball career, but were you ever, was 6'7" John Jansen out there ever, you know, skating on swords?
I love to skate. I can skate. I just can't stop. I did play hockey for a brief moment, until all I could do was either run into the boards or, run into the goalie or anybody else that was in front of me. So my hockey was pretty much contained to the pond or to the driveway, and, enjoyed playing it, but never really got competitively, into it.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we wish them luck this season. Obviously went to the Frozen Four a couple of years ago. Good luck to them. All right, John, Iowa. Saturday, the Big House, a chance not for redemption, but to prove that that game 2 weeks ago was not what this team will be moving forward, that this team is a Big Ten contender. What would you say? Give us your locker room speech.
This is a matchup between two traditional Big Ten teams, the Iowa Hawkeyes under Hayden Fry and now Kirk Ferentz, and Michigan under Bo Schembechler, Lloyd Carr, Gary Moeller, and now Jim Harbaugh. When you think about these programs, you think about the Midwest, and you think about all that makes the Midwest as valuable as it is to the United States of America. It's the hard work. It is the offensive linemen coming off the ball and firing out, establishing a line of scrimmage and establishing a run game. That will be one of the keys to this game. And when you think about that, you think about John Runyon taking on AJ Epineza. It's all about the matchups. It's Ronnie Bell, wide receiver, against Geno Stone, their defensive back. Shea Patterson, Nate Stanley, offensive line, defensive line. Tristan Wirfs, they're all Big Ten, All-American offensive tackle, against Aiden Hutchinson. Levert Hill has to have a terrific game against Amir Smith-Marset. When you think about this game, it comes down to who wants it more. What happened in Madison, and what is going to happen in Ann Arbor? What did you learn from a very deflating game in Madison? Do we want to see that again? Hell no! We want to see Michigan go out there and fight for what is Michigan, and that is a Big Ten championship, pride in the Big House, and I guarantee you Michigan is fired up and ready to take on that battle. Because when you listen to this podcast on Wednesday morning or Wednesday night on the way home from work, you get home and you give your wife a kiss, you give your husband a kiss, you give little Kirk a little pat on the head, little Lily a little pat on the head, and you tell them before they go to bed that on Saturday morning when Michigan takes on Iowa, it is going to be nothing but go blue. We'll talk to you next week on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.